Great new songs by Tom Paxton. Do you know the story that there was somebody came into a restaurant and saw a very distinguished looking man sitting in the corner? Apparently, true story. And couldn't quite identify him, and asked the waiter, "Who is that person sitting there?" And the waiter said, "That's Fritz Kreisler." And the woman said, "Oh, marvelous, I must get his autograph." She went over to him and said, "Mr. Kreisler, would you please give me your autograph? I've been riding in your cars for years."
I love it. Oh, that's
apparently
great.
actually happened. Tom, one problem I would imagine with writing topical songs is that when the topic changes, you're out of luck. Now, on the same record, this was, again, a live performance, but the song is available on your record. And there's a piece called Gasline Romance, which is a very funny thing about this thing that, you know, this attraction that grew while I was waiting on the long lines. Now there are no long lines. So what happens to a song like that?
There are no long lines this week, you mean.
Oh, I see. You just put it in the icebox and wait till...
That's right. I mean, do you for 1 minute suppose that there will never be hideous gas lines again? Of course there will. But actually, you know, you takes your choice, you takes your risk, you write the song, and the hope is that you'll write a song that will transcend its topicality.
Yeah.
Certain of Woody Guthrie's songs, for example.
Sure, the Dust Bowl songs
have outlived the topicality just because they are good songs.
Mm-hmm.
Greensleeves was originally a topical song about a camp follower, but the song is so beautiful that we still sing it today.
Do you spend more time crafting the lyrics, which are, in a sense, the essence of the piece, or the song, or the melody?
The lyrics certainly come first for me. Mm-hmm. And then there's some kind of a circuit that eliminates melodies that don't go with the words, and you just kind of look for melodies that fit the words, that fit the rhythm of them and the mood.
Have you ever figured out or totaled up how many songs you've written?
No, because it's not a very interesting statistic to me, because I'm aware of how many songs I write and throw away. I think I must write between 50 and 150 songs a year. And if I come away from that with 10 that I really like to put on a record, and of those 10 that go on a record... 5 that last in the repertoire, the performing repertoire, then it's been a really good year. Which is why this album pleased me so much, because really every song on the album has at one time or another been in the repertoire. I have felt, you know, okay about performing it live.
Do you like songs to stay in your repertory, or are you very happy when other folk singers swipe them? And
I think
them
that makes me the happiest.
Oh, yeah?
When the songs are picked up by other people, there's always the chance of making royalties from their recordings of them, which is something I love to consider. But it's the compliment, the fact that you've written something they like sufficiently well to stand up and sing themselves. That really pleases me.
And Tom, do you one other question I've been sort of wanting to ask you for a long while. Do you feel a little bit like the Last of the Mohicans, in the sense that so many of the folk performers have gone either to pop materials primarily, or to jazz forms, or to other things that fuse and go into different categories, whereas you are pretty much performing, you go to a Tom Paxton now, a concert now, and a Tom Paxton concert 10 years ago, the songs are all different, mostly, but your approach, your manner, your method of dealing with the audience, your use of the acoustic guitar, all of these things are pretty much the same. Do you feel that...
I think it goes back to what I said a little while ago, that it's primarily a dialogue with me. I'm not really interested in other musical forms, at least for myself. I admire jazz musicians, but I feel no lack of jazz-based chords in my music. I don't feel I don't feel as if I'm lacking something by not, you know, flatting sevenths and whatever they do. It's intriguing music, but not for me.
Not for you.
It really is front porch stuff for me, and I'm really content playing this way. I feel like people ask me sometimes if I don't want to do other things, like, you know, write a book or be in a movie or things like that, and it really doesn't occur to me very often because there's so much, so many songs I haven't written yet. Yeah. You know, there's so much to be done.
What about the audiences? We've had ups and downs in folk music. There was a time when everything was folk music during the Kingston Trio heyday.
Sure.
Now there seem to be comparatively few. I mean, you and Pete Seeger and a few others who have stayed with the tried and true in that sense, in that simple communicative form. You find audiences around the country are still there?
I really do. I was just out at Oberlin, a place you know well.
Yeah.
I've been out there four times now. I usually go during freshman orientation week. Incidentally, now it has come to the point now where I'm singing for college freshmen. I'm singing for young people who were not even born when I turned professional. And we had about 700 people in the chapel, and they absolutely loved it. They just loved the songs. So I think that one of the great secrets of folk music is that it's timeless. Even when the songs are topical, you see, they're in this unpretentious musical style that people have no trouble connecting with. Now, it may not be their favorite music, you see. It may not be the stuff they like the most in the world, but they don't have any trouble connecting to it.
Absolutely right. Tom Paxton, the first time you came to WQXR, it was to participate in our Woody's Children program. And I gather you've got a song about Woody.
Yeah, I don't know why I waited so long to write a song for Woody. Certainly Woody, together with Pete, have been my avatars. I was a middle-class kid in Oklahoma.
You were born very close to Woody, weren't you?
No, I was born in Chicago, but we moved to Oklahoma when I was 10, and we lived just 26 miles from Okemah, which is Woody's birthplace. But I never even knew the man's name until I went off to college. He was never spoken of much in Oklahoma in those days.
Really?
I think that, you know, the powers that be felt that he was, you know, a somewhat suspect character. And he wasn't their blessed Will Rogers, you see, who was squeaky clean and offended nobody.
I remember there was some big discussion whether they should or should not put up a plaque on the house that he lived in.
Well, they were going to make a library in Okemah, Oklahoma, a Woody Guthrie Library Museum. And the Chamber of Commerce rose in their wrath and defeated this plan. Screaming red, and in one of life's little ironies, the president of the Chamber of Commerce at that time was a childhood friend of mine.
Really?
And
you write and give him a piece of your mind?
No, I was afraid to. I was afraid of saying the things I really felt. I didn't want to, you know. Perhaps I should have, but I think maybe I was wise just to keep it to myself. But, so my association and love for Woody goes way back. I don't know why. I'm kind of glad, though, that I waited long enough to put it down this way.